Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. Smoke dreams, sorcerers, ghosts, and stalking monsters. We'll experience paranormal jazz encounters with those specters through the music of Duke Ellington, Miles Davis, Lenny Tristano, and Red Norvo in the next hour. And we'll also recount the mysterious ends of four notable jazz musicians and hear some of their recordings as well. It's Jazz Haunts for Halloween, coming up next on Nightlights. The songwriter Cy Coleman wrote this melody for a 1957 musical review called Take Five, no relation to the subsequent Paul Desmond tune immortalized by the Dave Brubeck Quartet, and Carolyn Lee added words, leaving Frank Sinatra to complete the alchemy of a standard with his 1957 recording of the song Witchcraft. Here's the Bill Evans Trio's 1959 instrumental version of it on Nightlights. Thank you. Bill Evans Trio in 1959, performing Witchcraft with Evans on piano, Scott LaFaro on bass, and Paul Motion on drums from the album Portrait in Jazz. Jazz Haunts for Halloween is the theme on this edition of Nightlights, and for the first half of the program, we'll be encountering sorcerers, ghosts, and stalking monsters in jazz instrumental form through the music of Duke Ellington, Miles Davis, and Lenny Tristano, among others. We'll hear Tristano in our first set, along with alto saxophonist Lee Konitz, performing a song that goes all the way back to Bing Crosby in 1932, with lyrics by Crosby and Ned Washington, and the music by Victor Young, who wrote a number of melodies that became jazz standards, Stella by Starlight, When I Fall in Love, and Street of Dreams. The song is Ghost of a Chance, a favorite of Tristano's for improvisation. First, something rather otherworldly from the team of singer Mildred Bailey, vibraphonist bandleader Red Norvo, and arranger Eddie Sauter, a song that originated in the 1936 movie After the Thin Man, and which Sauter, supposedly angry at Bailey for her domineering ways with Norvo's band, made as difficult as possible for the vocalist to sing. As writer Will Friedwald points out, it's literally impossible for Bailey to find her opening note in this bizarre Martian opening, but pianist Bill Miller calmly supplies her with the F natural that she needs to get going, and from that point on, she's as unsinkable as ever. Mildred Bailey and Smoke Dreams on this Halloween week edition of Nightlights. pianist Lenny Tristano and Ghost of a Chance with Lee Konitz on alto sax from the album Tristano, the New Tristano. Singer Mildred Bailey and vibraphonist bandleader Red Norvo before that with Eddie Sauter's arrangement of Smoke Dreams from the complete Columbia recordings of Mildred Bailey on the Mosaic label. In our next set of classic jazz with a Halloween twist, we'll hear something from Duke Ellington's extended work Night Creature, recorded with Ellington's big band, augmented by the Stockholm Symphony Orchestra while Ellington was touring Europe in 1963. The movement Stalking Monster was said by Ellington to evoke that imaginary monster we all fear we shall have to meet some midnight. I'm sure we shall find that he, too, does the boogie-woogie. First, something from the so-called second great quintet of trumpeter Miles Davis, his mid-1960s group that included Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Herbie Hancock on piano, Ron Carter on bass, and Tony Williams on drums. It's the title track from his 1967 album Sorcerer, dedicated to Davis by its composer, Herbie Hancock, who said that Miles is a sorcerer. His whole attitude, the way he is kind of mysterious. His music sounds like witchcraft. There are times I don't know where his music comes from. It doesn't sound like he's doing it. It sounds like it's coming from somewhere else. Miles Davis and the Sorcerer on Nightlights.
Thank you. Thank you.
Duke Ellington with the stalking creature movement of his extended composition Night Creature from the Symphonic Ellington, and Miles Davis before that with Herbie Hancock's composition The Sorcerer from Davis's album Sorcerer. Coming up in just a few moments, jazz musicians who met mysterious ends. You can listen to this and previous Nightlights programs on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/nightlights. I'm David Bren Johnson, and you're listening to Jazz Haunts for Halloween on Nightlights. Mysterious Ends is the theme of the second half of this Halloween week edition of Nightlights, the music and stories of four notable jazz musicians whose deaths remain something of a mystery. We'll begin with the story of Jack Purvis, an intense, erratic, and flamboyant trumpeter from Kokomo, Indiana. Legends about him abound, that he climbed the Alps in his bare feet, that he ran guns in Mexico, that he flew a plane under all the New York City River bridges, that he was chased by gendarmes across the rooftops of Paris, that he stole a horse in a bid to impress jazz singer Connie Boswell, delivering it to her apartment door. In the late 1930s, he was arrested for robbery and imprisoned in Texas, where he led a jailhouse band that broadcast over the radio. An inmate on death row was so taken with the group that he requested a stay of execution to hear them one last time. His request was granted by the warden, who subsequently requested all judges in the district to never set execution dates on nights that coincided with Purvis's performances. Purvis vanished not long after his release from prison in 1947. In 1962, a body alleged to be his was found in a San Francisco rooming house, an apparent suicide from carbon monoxide poisoning. An autopsy indicated that cirrhosis was the actual cause of death. The mystery deepened 6 years later when a man purporting to be Purvis showed up in a San Francisco nightclub. His physical description and extensive knowledge of obscure 20s and 30s musicians with whom Purvis had performed led some jazz scholars, such as Richard Suttle, to profess belief that the man may have indeed been Purvis. If so, he was never heard from again, only deepening the legend of Jack Purvis. Here's Jack Purvis in 1929 with Coppy and Lewis on Nightlights.
Thank you.
trumpeter Jack Purvis, who may or may not have died in 1962 in a San Francisco rooming house, performing Coppy and Lewis. An air of mystery surrounds the death of Wardell Gray as well. Gray was a swing-to-bop tenor saxophonist, reflecting both the coolness of Lester Young and the heat of Gray's bebop contemporaries, with what jazz writer Ted Joya describes as a mature, distinctive sound, one that could be lyrical and driving at the same time. Joya also notes the elusive and sometimes contradictory aspects of the little that we know about Gray, nicknamed the Thin Man for his slight build, a chess player and reader of Shakespeare and Sartre who spoke eloquently about progressive politicians and civil rights organizations, a man initially strongly opposed to the use of drugs who became a strung-out heroin addict. Gray died at the age of 34 in 1955, his body found in the desert several miles outside of Las Vegas. Rumors circulated that Gray had been murdered by dealers he'd burned, or by mobsters for having an affair with somebody's girlfriend. The most credible story seems to be that he overdosed in a Vegas hotel room, and that a panicked companion dumped his corpse. There's no mystery, however, about Gray's talent and fire, captured most notably in one of the first and greatest tenor saxophone duels in jazz history, Wardell Gray, Dexter Gordon, and The Chase on Nightlights.
Thank you.
Wardell Gray and fellow tenor saxophonist Dexter Gordon in 1947 performing The Chase. Another tenor saxophonist whose death is tinged with mystery is Albert Eiler, a key figure in the free jazz movement of the 1960s. Eiler's music was once described as sounding like a New Orleans marching band on LSD. His roots were in the R&B scene of the 1950s, but he took the honking tenor sound into a far more musically complex and spiritually elevated realm in the 1960s, utilizing a powerful tone, a wide range of registers, a disregard for conventional notes and rhythms, and a deep reservoir of psychic courage. John Coltrane was among his admirers and helped get him signed to Impulse Records. But after Coltrane's death in 1967 and the nervous breakdown of Eiler's trumpeter and brother Donald, Eiler began to pursue a more mainstream musical path, disappointing his avant-garde fans. In July of 1970, he played some concerts in France that returned stylistically in some ways to his early to mid-1960s sound. Not long after that, in early November, Eiler disappeared, and his body was found several weeks later in New York City's East River. There were rumors that Eiler had been murdered, and for years afterwards, uncertainty surrounded his death. In 1983, his companion and late-period musical partner Mary Parks told an interviewer that Eiler had been feeling despondent and blaming himself for his brother's mental health problems, and that he had committed suicide by jumping off a ferry. No evidence has emerged since then to contradict her account. We're going to hear some music now from one of those final concerts. Albert Eiler in France in 1970, just several months before his disappearance, performing In Heart Only on Nightlights.
Thank you.
Albert Eiler performing In Heart Only from a concert performance in France in July of 1970, several months before his body was found in New York City's East River. I'll conclude this Jazz Haunts for Halloween edition of Nightlights with one more mysterious end story and recording from trumpeter and vocalist Chet Baker. Baker led what can be described with some confidence as a troubled life, rising to stardom in the 1950s first on the strength of his trumpet playing, then on his good looks and vulnerable singing voice, but at the same time descending into a drug addiction that would dog him for the rest of his life, leading to occasional jail sentences and other legal troubles. Baker spent much of the last 10 years of his life performing and recording in Europe, and it was there that he died on May 13, 1988, in Amsterdam in the Netherlands, his body found on the sidewalk 30 feet below a hotel room where he'd been staying. Theories abounded that he'd fallen out of his room's window accidentally, that a dealer he hadn't paid off had pushed him out. But his room was locked from the inside and showed no signs of a struggle, and the window from which he'd fallen could only be opened 15 inches, making an accidental fall unlikely. Baker biography James Gavin, who extensively chronicled the drug-induced emotional frenzy of Baker's final days, believes Baker's death was quite possibly a desperate act of will on the trumpeter's part. We're going to hear some music from one of Baker's final concerts now, a standard that's come to be associated with him, Chet Baker and My Funny Valentine on Nightlights. Thank you. I close with trumpeter Chet Baker performing My Funny Valentine from the last great concert. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. You can listen to this and previous Nightlights programs on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/nightlights. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.